what is the ultimate extrapolation of cooperation? Love. So if you want a scientific definition of evolution, it's ultimately to grow up and become love, or at least become more loving. So if we're here in Earth School to do that, how do we get strong? You know, otherwise, we'd just be all born loving, and that'd be cool. But then there'd be no reason to be here, right? If you showed up at school on your first day in kindergarten and they gave you a degree and sent you home, it'd be no point. So how do we grow? Well, go to nature.
Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast. If you would like to listen in on thought-provoking conversations with countercultural thought leaders and experts in the fields of wealth, health, and relationships, the three keys to having what I call a wealthy, wealthy life, then this is the show for you. I'm Christina Wise, real estate investor, best-selling author of Falling for Money, and founder of Wealthy, Wealthy, where I serve as your personal guide to money, health, and happiness. Welcome back to Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise. In this episode, I talk to my great friend, business coach and personal mentor, Peter Sage. This conversation is loaded with nuggets. You're going to love it. Some of the highlights, we talk about the biggest unknown fear that holds most people back and keeps them stuck and in a rut. He talks about the mental diet of the most successful and fulfilled. He talks about how most people are bankrupt on self-love and how to love yourself, how to learn to love yourself while staying out of what he calls goop, the good opinion of others. And he uses a metaphor called Earth School that I absolutely love. I think it's just such a powerful metaphor about being tested. We're here for a growth-centric experience and we get tested through life and how when we know and learn how to handle adversity, we can use it as a means for living a growth-centric, fulfilling, experiential, juicy, good life. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Enjoy.
Peter, it's so much fun to be on this call with you. And it's, as always, it's just so great to see you. So thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure, Christina. As I say, one of the perks of what I get to do these days is spend time talking with incredible people. So, you know, thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. And you recently made it home from London. You were here in Austin, Texas, speaking at the Wealthy Wealthy Live event. So again, just a public thank you. And obviously, everybody loved you. And your work and your wisdom that you shared was remarkable and changed so many lives. So thank you. A big shout out to you.
Oh, thank you. Great opportunity to finally get to see Austin. It's been on the bucket list for a while. So,
well, that's awesome. It's a good town, isn't it?
Love it. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, great. Well, today, it's funny, so just everybody listening, just a little backstory is that, and I think it's a really fun story because a lot of what you talked about at the Wealthy Wealthy Life event and even my talk, it was really about just being more in the magic of life and the serendipity and the spontaneity and letting go of some of this external need for feeling good enough. And, you know, so, you know, we had some overlap in our messaging. Our story, I think, is a really great example of that. So I wanted to share it with everybody listening in is that universal intention would have it that you and I actually did a podcast, our second podcast interview a few months back. And I was taking just these, I mean, notes, everything you said, of course, was riveting. And I mean, I had pages and pages of notes and I was just so excited and couldn't wait to share it with my listeners. And then at the end of that call, you had invited me to come to London to your four-day event. And so, so, and then of course, that was just a magical event. But the podcast interview that you and I had was on a Monday and your event started on a Thursday. So I just thought, well, what the hell? You invited me to come. I thought if I could make it happen, if Kirk and I could make it happen, we would do it. And we did. And of course, you know, we just never even thought it could work out in a million years, but it did and it was meant to be. So the funny thing is that's where you and I really established a personal relationship, a friendship. And, you know, beyond just kind of the business stuff, what I told you when we had breakfast that next day after your event is, Peter, I have something I have to tell you that's a little bit embarrassing, but I just have to be honest, is that amazing podcast interview that we did together, I forgot to press the record button.
I felt for you. I really did.
Oh my gosh. It was like 90 minutes of amazing, but that wasn't meant to be the podcast. What that was meant to be is for you and I to have that 90 minutes to talk. That got me to London. That got the friendship. That got you to Austin. That gets us back and we'll be in Bali together. Here all together with your master circle here in a few weeks. And so just a really great example of letting the magic happen. So I'd love to talk to you a little bit about that today. And really look at from your perspective? Well, first of all, for everybody listening, that if they've not heard of you, a lot of my listeners have heard of you because I've spoken of you often and you did have that first interview. We did do that first interview. But for those listening, just share a little bit about yourself.
I mean, one of the first things I normally do is remind people that, you know, regardless of how we sort of put our accolades on the table or our resume, as it were, you know, we're all made of the same stuff. We're all just people on our own journeys. So mine's no special than anybody else's. You know, we just have our own individual unique paths. And my path really took me out of the academic pathway. At 16, I dropped out of school. I'd always had that calling to feel as if I wanted to be an entrepreneur because I never really wanted to settle for what somebody else was prepared to pay me. That always seemed like a dead-end idea. And, you know, I luckily didn't calibrate my self-worth with my net worth, so I was willing to take risks. And I went out, I started my first business at 17. And for the first, you know, 25 plus years after that, I was known really as a pretty tenacious entrepreneur, pretty creative. I'd started many different companies in many different industries, usually from scratch or from, you know, having been burnt to the ground and having sort of have to rise again. And that whole fun journey that goes along with it. And so, you know, I was known more as an entrepreneur. And I'd always paralleled that with a lifelong commitment to personal growth. And I say lifelong, that isn't really true. It was really from the age of 17. Now, after leaving school at 16, I discovered or stumbled across, as usually happens, personal growth and development at 17. And so I really threw myself into that because I was amazed that there was an industry that actually taught you how to be successful. And that was the promise of personal growth. And I was like, wow, where was that on the options at school? Because I never got to see where that class was on the semester. You know, I never got to take that class. I would have signed up for that in a heartbeat. And instead, I was presented with options that didn't light my fire, you know, algebra, you know, chemistry, you know, whatever it may be. None of which really, you know, as I say, really compelled me to, you know, to leap out of bed in the morning. So when I discovered personal growth, it turned me on. I was like, wow. And I think I came across a quote at the time by the, you know, the late, great Jim Rohn, who said that, you know, formal education may help you make a fortune. You know, and that's, you know, very much in doubt these days in the current climate and model. You know, more people leave university qualified to be a barrister that can't get a job as a barista. Yeah, so formal education may help you make a living, but informal education will help you make a fortune. And that, I really took that to heart. In other words, you know, rather than have a self-imposed, you know, sort of government indoctrination camp known as a school, you know, have their self-imposed curriculum forced upon me due to an outdated model of reality called prepare people for the industrial revolution, what I would do outside of that and how I pick and chose to use my time learning through this incredible invention called the internet where information is essentially free. You know, how I chose to apply myself to that could make the you know, complete difference between my life path that I took. And so I paralleled my entrepreneurial career with personal growth and development. And it was my passion, my hobby. Every waking moment, I was listening to a tape or an audio or, you know, not so much podcasts in those days. Yeah, but, you know, I was making notes. Whereas a lot of my friends that I went to school with were, you know, I could predict were sitting in the same bar on the same seat, ordering the same drink, telling the same jokes and not really doing much. Now, not through any fault of their own. They'd just, you know, probably been a little more influenced in the indoctrination camp than I'd been. So, you know, for me, my background was one of walking the line of entrepreneurialism, which taught me how to handle uncertainty at a high degree, which is a fabulous skill set for life. And also one of personal growth and development on my own journey of evolution, which really taught me, you know, how to mature emotionally, not just, you know, chronologically. So that's it. That's the only real difference I have to the, you know, people that I kind of went to school with. You know, I'm certainly not smarter than them or anybody else by any stretch. You know, I probably couldn't spell MBA. Yeah, so from my side, you know, school, academia, you know, bottom of the class. You know, PhD in life and results. Yeah, I'm getting there. So that was really my background.
Yeah, and I love that. And you're I still love that about you is that, you know, this has been really your career. Like you said, you've been an incredible entrepreneur and you go big. I mean, what I really admire about you, there's no safety in your world. It's like go big or go home. And you're willing to fall. You're willing to fail. You're willing to crash and burn and just dust yourself up and just go right back at it again. And it's really admirable, especially in light of maybe the last year or so. And it's like, all right, there was a lesson to get learned. There was a test, you know, that I had to take and hopefully pass. So on that note, like, what is it, do you think, that holds people back in a way that they're afraid to go big? They're afraid to make big life decisions. They know they're stuck, but they won't make a change. They won't make a decision. But they'll complain and stay stuck. And so what is that? Is there any formula or anything that you know of that, you know, there's just such a majority of people that really maybe live in fear, or just that fear paralyzes them when they know they're not happy, they know they're not healthy, they know their relationships aren't where they'd like them to be, but they won't make change, as opposed to maybe the smaller percentage that just is like, I'm scared as hell, but I'm going to jump in the deep end and I may drown, but guess what? I'm not going to stay where I was. And it's almost like there's these two camps. What is that? And do you have any coaching for one where people, I think a lot of listeners and a lot of people these days, they really do feel stuck. In my money coaching, I hear it all the time when I ask people, like, why are you here? What's the coaching? Like, I'm just so stuck. I need something. I just don't know what that is.
Again, a lot of people are looking for, you know, what's the magic formula or what's the number one thing? And one thing I'm always mindful of is that, you know, life is an orchestra. It's not an instrument. You know, there's so many different factors involved. I can share with you some of the most significant instruments in the orchestra, but, you know, some are going to play different tunes for other people. However, in, you know, 30 years now of working in the field of human behavior and personal growth, you know, both as a individual on his own journey and, you know, for the last 20 plus years coaching many people from all sorts of cultures, there are definitely some commonalities that I think could benefit the audience from discussing or leaning into and sharing with you, hopefully some ways to be able to shortcut that out. Because again, we don't learn this in school. You know, you could be trapped in a pattern that, like a fly banging its head against the window, that, you know, it could die there in the next 3 hours, not knowing that 6 inches away, there's an open window. You know, sometimes all it takes is a shift in context, a shift in perception to say, oh, wow, that's why this has been going on. I just never knew. And so what would be great, I think, on, you know, on this podcast, if, you know, say, give me the opportunity to share, what are some of the open windows nearby? And what are some of the, you know, the glass that people are banging their head against? And if we can identify some of those, then people are more free to choose. Yeah, because at the end of the day, it is free will.
It is free will. And yes, I would love to go there. And because what I see also in this world of information, I mean, there's no shortage of information. And clearly, if information was the answer, we'd all be wealthy and have six-pack abs, right? So it's not a lack of information, but it's like people are just trying to get the right, like the right answer or more information, or they're waiting. If I just get the right information, then maybe that will be the key to happiness or key to money or key to health or the key to something. So yeah, talk more about this.
Well, just on that point, you know, it's often said that, you know, people are drowning in information and starving for wisdom. Mm-hmm. And that really alludes to the fact that there is so much information out there. It's hard to know which is actually what I call profound knowledge, knowledge that actually makes a difference. But identifying that profound knowledge is only part of the issue. Applying it requires us to let go of a lot of the fears or blocks or resistances that many people have that come up, that, you know, prevent them from, even though they know what to do, they don't do what they know. And that's a far bigger block than not having access to identifying the right information. Now, one of the biggest things that prevents people from moving forward, a lot of the time, well, you can always boil it down to fear. Yeah, but fear's a giant word. It's like love. Love is a four-letter word that you can apply to so many different categories. You know, I love my dogs. I love the pizza. I love massage. I love my partner. Yeah, that's one word doesn't equal the same thing. Same with fear. But ultimately, it boils down to a couple of primary awarenesses that many people are unconscious of. The first one is understanding that the biggest fear that most people have is that fear that they're not enough. And that comes out of a childhood, usually, of where we don't get love, or we don't get the perception of love from where we think we wanted it or deserved it from most. And a lot of that is the model that mom and dad puts on the child, where, you know, if they do well, they're rewarded with acceptance, validation, approval. If they're not, the perception of that is withdrawn. I'm not saying the actual love is withdrawn. Now, mom will love their kids even if the kid does something wrong. But the behavior training techniques are that in the mind of the child, now, if they don't do their homework on time, they don't get the ice cream. Yeah. So yeah, there is a lifelong pattern that's set up from an early age of thinking that we have to be good enough in order to get what we most want or crave, which is love. So, you know, on that basis, to avoid the fear that we're not enough, people will do almost anything. And that translates into designing their life, their behavior, their hobbies, where they choose to go on holiday, who they choose to marry. You know, all of that stuff is usually designed at an unconscious level through the filter of, will this trigger the fear that I'm not enough? And so letting go of that is huge. And one of the most common expressions of that is found in what I call goop, or essentially modifying our behavior in order to win the good approval or the good opinion of other people, G-O-O-P, good opinion of other people. And people spend their life swimming in this, you know, potential draining substance called goop. Now, on the other side of goop is something that I try and encourage or help all of my students get to. And it's a place that I call social freedom. Mm. Once you experience social freedom, you are independent of the good opinion of others. Now, it doesn't mean to say you don't care. That's having a lack of empathy. That's bravado, ego, and a sort of, you know, flipping life the finger saying, yeah, I'm not bothered. But not modifying your behavior so that you become inauthentic in order to try to adapt to somebody else's pictures that you're guessing will then lead to approval is a different conversation. And so, you know, most people don't get out of goop. Most people never have social freedom. Most people are wearing masks, which is, you know, the root cause of, or sorry, the etymology of the word persona, which obviously in Latin means mask. You know, we wear these masks to try to adapt. You know, if you don't like me this way, I'll be that way. If you don't like me that way, I'll be this way. And we become this giant adaptation machine, this chameleon of inauthenticity, not to manipulate people, but to protect ourselves from the fear that we're not enough or, and therefore we won't be loved. So getting out of goop is a big first step for many people to really start to express or live their true potential without having to, you know, compromise their level of greatness through being under the illusion that people actually care enough about them to bother to give an opinion. And that's always the irony of it. You know, it's such a paradox. When you finally have social freedom, you realize you were running from a ghost because nobody actually cared enough about you to bother to give an opinion because they were too busy being worried about what they think. Yeah, you're thinking of them. It's a ghost. You know, you're standing at the bar as a teenager, you know, 20 or a 20-year-old high on hormones, and you're standing there as a guy and you make eye contact with somebody, you know, a girl across the room, and there's some chemistry there. And all of a sudden you go into this elaborate game of, I wonder what she thinks of me. You know, I wonder if she noticed my form. I wonder if she noticed my, you know, my fake Rolex. I wonder if she noticed I paid with a 50 instead of a 20. I wonder if she likes tall men or what, all of this stuff. And of course, you know, that there's chemistry there. And if the guys actually knew what the women were really thinking, it would be a revelation. Because what the woman's really thinking, if there's the, you know, reciprocal level of chemistry, is this. Oh, I wonder if my hair's gone frizzy in this nightclub. Yeah, I wonder if he's noticed that ladder in my tights. Yeah, I wonder if that crease in my blouse is shut. Whatever it may be, it's all the same language pattern. Yeah, I wonder what their opinion of me is, and I'm then going to be self-critical of that and try to avoid or that level of self-criticism by modifying my behavior to avoid it.
Yeah, great. And absolutely. And we're all guilty of that. And so when I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, absolutely. And then following that, it's like, okay, how do I get out of that trap? Because, you know, what I see is that when people are living in the place of the good opinion of others, the goop, they're afraid of letting somebody else down. They're afraid of being disliked. They're afraid of, they don't want anybody to be angry. They don't want to be unpopular. Again, I don't like the words steps or some of this nonsense, but is there a method basically for starting to do the work to get out of that cycle, to get out of that trap and out of just the habitual subconscious or unconscious pattern, to move over more into authenticity, learn to love ourselves, be comfortable in our own skin, be okay with people liking us or not liking us for who we really are?
Yes. Yeah. And you cover one of the main points there, but there's two real big steps. The first is to wake up and realize that it's a complete ghost. As I said, most people, you know, are walking around not caring about you because you are a film extra in their movie. The biggest problem we make as the star of our own movie is we think that they're seeing us as the star of our movie. And they're not. They're the star of their own movie, and we're a film extra. So, you know, that misperception allows you to wake up and realize that what you thought was real in terms of judgment and opinion isn't actually going on. The second key is to recognize that the reason we are so scared of not getting approval is because we don't have enough of it for ourselves. Yeah, there is not enough self-love. And one of the analogies I often give is, you know, if you were walking down the road and you had your last, you know, dollar bill, and yeah, that was it. You'd just been made, you know, homeless, you were bankrupt, you were penniless, you were jobless, and this was your last money, and all of that sense of despair, all of that sense of fear, and you walk into a public library to try to stay warm, and you sit there in a private little room out of the way that you found around the corner, and you put this dollar bill on the table and you stare at it wondering, where do I go from here? And all of a sudden at that moment, when you're at your lowest point, when you know nothing else could go wrong, somebody bursts in, some crazy person, obviously high on drugs or whatever, and they go and they see you, they see the bill, and before you can do anything, they run over, they snatch the dollar bill and they run out of the room. And you're like, oh my God, that was my last dollar. I mean, if you emotionally connect to that, it's like that's how most people would just be like, could my day get any worse? My life get any worse? If instead you're walking down to the library and you see a sign saying, you know, lotto, jackpot tonight, $20 million. And you think, what the hell, nothing to lose. And you buy a lotto ticket with your last dollar and you win. And you have $20 million. And you're like, oh my God. And just because you dreamed about it, you go and, yeah, you sign a form, you agree to get it taken out in cash because you want to know what it looks like. And just imagine you in a suitcase took that to the library as a place where you used to go when you were, you know, penniless, and you're in that private little room and you stack up this $20 million on the table and you sit there looking at it and saying, wow, now what has my life become? Now what are the possibilities? Now where can I go? Now what freedom do I have? And in that moment, just as you're contemplating, yeah, that same, you know, homeless, you know, urchin on drugs, whatever, crazy wide-eyed hair all over the place, you know, goofy teeth, whatever, you know, image, you know, bursts into the room, looks at you, sees the money, runs straight over to the table, grabs $1 and runs out. How do you feel? Probably not as bad. You probably think he clearly needs it more than I do. Why didn't he take some more? Now, instead of a dollar, what would happen if we start to realize that what we're really talking about there is either $1 or $20 million worth of self-love. So if you walk in and that you've got your last dollar on the table and somebody bursts in and starts calling you a name or having an argument or doesn't give you a compliment or what have you, it's like taking your last dollar off the table. But if you've got $20 million of self-love and somebody bursts in the room and then takes a dollar, no big deal. And so many people are bankrupt when it comes to self-love, or they're so low, or they're trying to trade. They think, oh, you know, I've got such a low, you know, self-love bank account, I'll go buy some love. And they think that, you know, if I give you my last dollar, maybe you'll give me $2 back. Of course, it doesn't work that way. Yeah, you can only have it for yourself. No one's going to give you any self-love. And the ultimate awareness is nobody can ever love you more than you love yourself. So how do you love yourself? Well, the first step is to realize that you can't get it from somebody else. And if you stop focusing on what's wrong with life, which is a primary condition of the media will train you unconsciously to consistently focus on what is wrong with the world, not what is right with the world. You know, I say to people that the mind is like a compass needle. It can only point in one direction at a time. And because we're conscious 5% of our life at best, the rest is what I call sleeping awake. And when we're conscious, we can choose where to point our compass needle. We can choose to be positive. We can choose to, you know, point in the direction of what's right, not what's wrong. But 95% of the time, we don't. What happens when we are sleeping awake, when we're walking around unconscious, like when we drive most of the time, you know, we respond most of the time, our compass needle repositions itself to its trained magnetic north. Yeah, now, we can redirect it consciously, but as soon as we take our eyes off the, you know, the prize and we go unconscious, it'll orientate towards its conditioned north. How do you condition a compass needle? Very simple. Go back to school. You take a magnet and you constantly stroke it in one direction. Now, if what you are programming your compass needle with is the news, the media, social media drama, all of the gossip, all of the stuff that people get emotionally negative charges over, which is almost everything you can turn on TV about these days, right, to try to get your attention, then you are constantly stroking your compass needle in the direction of being negative. What's wrong with life? Not what's right. So as soon as you take your eye off the ball, that's going to gravitate. So how do you get over this? You constantly program, consciously program your compass needle into a better direction. And it's something you consciously have to keep doing to remagnetize it so that when you experience anything from hardship to drama to all the other stuff people get hooked by, your default mentality when you go sleeping awake is more positive than negative. And so you start with, what is an inventory of awesomeness about myself? Now, if I was to ask my best friend or somebody else was to ask my best friend, you know, well, what are some of the great qualities about Christina? What are some of the great qualities about Kurt? What are the some? And you know, what would they say? You know, what would your friend say at your funeral? You know, where they're kind of compelled to sell nice things, say nice things, not you know, some of the stuff that we screw up over, right? If you create a list of or what I call an inventory of awesomeness, that will start to focus you, start to magnetize your compass needle more about what's right with your life and what's wrong with it. And over time, you'll start building up more references for that. You'll start seeing it because it becomes in your awareness. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. It's a process. But if you don't begin it, it'll never happen.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a quote that I heard that I really love is, you know, if you continue to do what you've always done, you will continue to get what you've always got. And so what you're saying, it's one, I think if I'm listening to what you're saying, the first thing is to wake up and to just be more aware. And then when we're more aware, we can be more selective or make different choices and maybe replace some habits or patterns with others. But we can't see our habits and patterns because we're ingrained in them. They're completely invisible. So until we can almost step outside of ourselves and look at our lives and ourselves objectively, in a way, and then say, okay, this isn't working. Maybe I can replace this habit with something else. So for example, maybe I can replace the hour of news or the 3 hours on social media with waking up and reading a book or reading some positive quotes or taking an inventory of the greatness that I am or working on the purpose and why I'm here. And to start replacing some of the, what you said, that in order to redirect the needle, it's like the only way we can redirect it is by replacing that direction with something else that will pull that needle over to a different direction. I mean, would you agree that it really is taking different actions? It's replacing old things with new things.
It's reconditioning. And to use an analogy that everybody will understand, yeah, because when we talk about metaphysical or non-physical, which the mind is, you can't put the mind on a pin, you know, it's or look at it under a microscope. It's non-physical. So we get confused because it's a little esoteric for people. But bringing it to the physical world, which we understand the rule sets of, you know, the sort of physics, the chemistry, the biology, we understand how the physical world works. So if I go to somebody and talk about diet, you know, if you're consistently eating cheeseburgers and pizzas and ice cream, yeah, your waistline is going to start telling. Yeah, and you're there, say, oh, but I keep eating this stuff, and why do I keep getting fat? Now, if you don't know there was a link between that and getting fat, you'd be stuck. You'd be the fly banging your head against the window. But most people are awake enough to realize that, you know, in order to change their waistline, they really have to change their lifestyle when it comes to diet. Unfortunately, what wasn't taught to us in school, and it should have been, is that the diet we want to be most concerned about is not the food we're eating, it's the thoughts we're thinking, and they operate in exactly the same way. If you want to become unhealthy at a mental level, which usually leads to disease in the body, then watch your mental diet. Yeah, if you're feeding it the junk food of news, media, gossip, drama, then don't expect to get healthy. Have self-love see the positive where everybody else sees negative, get yourself out of the funk, get out of your sense of depression, if you're not going to change your mental diet. You have to switch over. Now, does it happen overnight? No. If you've been eating cheeseburgers for 30 years, one salad isn't going to do a lot. Now, if you're not going to the gym for a lifetime, then going once isn't going to make you thin. It's going to make you sore. But you've got to go through that. It is a commitment to making that shift, knowing what's on the other side. And if you're scared because it's unknown, welcome to humanity, you and everybody else. Everybody gets scared at some level. It's just, where are you calibrated? You know, I personally believe, Christina, that the purpose of what I call Earth School, the reason we're here, if you want to chunk up one of the bigger questions, is to train ourselves to choose love instead of fear in ever more challenging circumstances. And for many people, that could be simply choosing the salad when your friends are choosing the McNuggets, right? And you're afraid of what that, you know, lack of social freedom or that good opinion, or you'll be ribbed or whatever. Yeah, for me and you, we're kind of past that. Yeah, so for us, it may be choosing love instead of fear when somebody, you know, decides to, you know, embezzle in our business. You know, it's a higher level of exam at a different level of Earth School. Okay, so, you know, but we're all on our own journey, and we will be presented the right scenarios, lessons that are pertinent to where we currently are, usually in Earth School.
Yeah, so, and talk about that a little bit more, because I really love the Earth School metaphor that you use. You really talked a lot about it, even at the event. So start from that, because I've even talked to my kids about it since. And really this idea that, you know, if you go to school and you don't know you're going to be tested, you'd be like, what the hell is this test? But when you go to school and you know you're going to be tested, the purpose of the test, and you'll say this better than I'm trying to do, but the purpose of the test is to see if you know the material, if you know enough or worthy enough, you pass the test to be able to go on and graduate to the next level, into the next grade, and to go from there. So share more of your story of Earth School as that metaphor in a little bit more detail.
Sure. Yeah, and it kind of begins with an awareness that there is an intelligence that's greater than us that is behind, let's call it the game. And I don't want to get into different levels of labels here. You know, the scientific community would call it evolution and nature. Yeah, the religious community will call it God. The spiritual community will call it infinite intelligence and consciousness. I'm not interested in labels. Yeah, whatever label works for you, I'm cool with. But regardless of the label, we tend to have to come to the awareness that there is something more intelligent than our level of conscious awareness that's governing the game called life. How do I know that? It's fairly self-evident when I see that, you know, I don't have to set my alarm for 4 a.m. to remind my heart to beat. Yeah, something smarter than me takes care of that. Yeah, your label for that, not interested. If we start with the assumption that there is an intelligence behind the creation of, let's call it, you know, life, Earth School, the environment that we're in, I don't think it just randomly happened for us to be able to create this experience so that we could engineer ourselves into a comfort zone to try to cope with battling through life. Now, I don't get that. No spiritual master of any significance gave us that message. For me, if I look at the parallel, as you say, of school, the purpose of school is not to be happy. That's a big distinction. The purpose of school isn't even for us to get a good education. That's usually a common misnomer. The purpose of school is to provide an environment where we can exercise free will or to be able to make better choices that could lead to us getting a better education or not. You know, we can choose to skip class, get drunk, not show up for exams, not apply ourselves, or we can choose to study, be diligent, you know, apply ourselves, show up for exams, etc. They are choices that we get to make through our, you know, God-given right of free will. Each one of those paths will likely have a higher probabilistic outcome, you know, pertinent to those choices. You know, one will probably lead to a no degree. One may lead to a good education and a degree, you know, under that context. Doesn't mean to say you can't be happy going through school, but if you didn't know that the purpose of school was to provide that environment for you to make choices that would lead to, you know, a higher probability of getting a good education or not, then you would resent the restrictions and the impositions that school places on you. You have to show up at 8:30 and you can't leave until 3:30. You have to walk down the corridor and be in this particular room at this particular time. You've got to listen to this particular professor. You've got to have this particular test. You'd be like, why? What's the point? If you didn't know that that what school was about, you'd feel oppressed and you'd feel resistant to that. Now, if you knew that it was there to be able to get your degree and that's what you really wanted, that was important to you, and the teachers came in one day and say, hey, listen, we've decided no more tests, no more exams. You can show up or you don't have to show up. You know, completely up to you guys. You know, forget it. All of these surprise, sort of exams, we're abolishing them. Like, wow, so cool. Wow, brilliant. But by the way, you don't graduate. There's no exams and you don't get a degree. You're like, well, hang on a minute. But I'm doing this because I want my degree. I may not like the test, but I know there's a reason why. So you have a context for it. Now, if you apply that to a bigger environment called what I call Earth School, being born into this physical matter reality, then if you don't have a context for why you're here, you are going to resent the tests. You're going to resent the exams, the graduation events, the adversity, having things forced upon you that weren't part of your pictures. And you're going to think that life is about trying to be happy and trying to engineer yourself into a comfort zone, because you would miss the fundamental awareness that for me is the game changer that leads to the gateway of emotional maturity. And that is this: life is a growth-centric experience. Get over it. Yeah, we're not here to party. We're not here to have a good time. We're not here to be happy. We're here to grow. Now, that doesn't mean to say, just like school, you can't party at times. You can't not be happy. You can't not have a good time or enjoy yourself. Some people love school. Some people have great memories of going through school. For some people, it was the best time of their life. And the real crap show happened when they left and faced the world head on like a truck. Yeah, it varies for different people. But when you understand that Earth School is an environment that is a growth-centric experience, once you know that, you start seeing adversity in a different way. You have a different relationship to your challenges. You suddenly realize that, well, if I'm here to learn certain lessons, and everything points to that we're here to grow up emotionally, spiritually, to a point where we become more loving and less fearful. Now, I don't just randomly say that because it sounds good in some esoteric, sort of jargon. I say that based upon 400 million years of fossil records, state that evolution has a very clear and very in-your-face purpose. And that is the purpose of evolution, the purpose of something evolving, is to become more complexed, to lower entropy, if you want to go to the second law of thermodynamics, to basically reduce the isolation and promote cooperation from a single-celled amoeba to a 150-odd trillion-cell large human being. The difference is intense cooperation. There is a sense of community, and community has to work in harmony. There is a sense of equanimity. There is an equilibrium. It would be absurd for us to think that our liver cells would go on strike because they were staging a protest that the lung cells were getting more hemoglobin. That's just stupid. No, our body is an evolutionary pinnacle of the expression of harmony and cooperation. And if you actually knew, if you got a sense, a real sense, not an intellectual sense, an emotional understanding of what your body does and how it does it, every single one of your cells is communicating up to 100,000 times a second in perfect harmony, synchronicity, both biochemically, electrically, electromagnetically, energetically, in perfect harmony. I mean, could you imagine if we were in charge of that consciously? We'd last a nanosecond before we'd fall into a uncompromising heap on the floor of a gibbering wreck. So, that is the ultimate expression of cooperation. What is the ultimate extrapolation of cooperation? Love. So if you want a scientific definition of evolution, it's ultimately to grow up and become love, or at least become more loving. So if we're here in Earth School to do that, how do we get strong? Otherwise, we'd just be all born loving and that'd be cool. But then there'd be no reason to be here. Right? If you showed up at school on your first day in kindergarten and they gave you a degree and sent you home, there'd be no point. So how do we grow? Well, go to nature. Now, the strongest trees don't grow in the best soil. They grow in the strongest winds. Muscles don't grow on the couch. They grow in the gym through adversity. They grow through being able to be challenged. They grow through constantly being broken down or having adversity and then growing through that to become stronger. That's a primary directive in evolution we cannot shortcut. It's built into the system before we showed up consciously. I mean, could you imagine going to a gym and doing a huge, training your arms for 2 hours? Yeah. And not being able to lift them up and sitting in the changing rooms after a shower and thinking, I really busted my ass off there for 2 hours training my arms. I wonder if they grow or not. I'm really worried. What if they don't? What if they don't move? What if I just wasted my 2 hours? No, we don't think like that. We know it's built into the program. It's the same at the metaphysical, which ultimately is what's growing the muscles, by the way. You know, if you look into an amino acid or a muscle fiber or any atom in the molecules in the muscle fiber, there's nothing there. It's energy. That's another conversation. But you get the whole aspect of Earth School. We're here to grow up through challenge and adversity and tests that we may bitch about if we were looking at it from the perspective of the muscle fiber. Oh my God, I'm being broken down. Please stop. Send a message to the brain. It's painful. But if we shift our perspective to the athlete who's proud that they could bust out that last rep against all of the screaming signals, and afterwards they walk around thinking, wow, I did that, because they have a context for wanting to run the marathon of life, then we see challenges completely differently.
So two things, and that's so good, and it causes two thoughts for me. The first thought is, and I love what you said, this is just so powerful. Somebody listening in, I really would almost like you to repeat it, because it can be just lost in all of this conversation. But the way you say it, that there really, I think, is this belief, and I don't know where this belief comes from, but like you said, it's this belief that we're here to be happy. And you're like, no, we're here to grow. Part of the growth is happiness, but part of the growth is adversity. You get the growth through the adversity. And then it's to get to this place of love. But when you say, I just love that, the purpose of life is not to be happy. I mean, that's just really important, because I think somewhere we've been programmed to think that is the purpose of life. So if we're not happy, then
something's wrong.
Something's completely wrong. And, I'm a victim of life one way or another. But so when you say life is, kind of the purpose of life is to have a growth-centric experience, how do you define growth? Like, what is growth? And even sort of personal growth, personal development, this constant growth, like what is growth?
The ability to choose love over fear in ever more challenging circumstances. That's the ultimate expression of growth. And when I say ever more challenging, go back to school. If you're in fifth grade, the questions are hard for fifth graders. They're meant to be. And at the end of the year, you get an exam. And if you pass the exam, you go to the sixth grade. And guess what? The questions are harder. They're meant to be. Yeah, it's a nonstop process. People have this mentality that, oh, I need to get somewhere in life where I can be comfortable and go, Well, that's like going to the gym saying, oh, I need to get a certain part in my physicality, then I can stop and quit. Well, no, it doesn't work that way. Then I can stop breathing and I'll just live happily ever after. That's not going to work. Yeah, it's a constant process, which is why we're here. We know if we're not growing, we're dying. If a tree isn't growing, what's it doing? Does a tree get to an acorn, become a sapling, and then say, that's it, I quit. I made it to being a sapling. Now I just want to break. I can't be doing with another drought. I can't be doing with another flood. I can't be doing with another insect eating part of my bark. No, it's on a journey. And everywhere we see, we're surrounded by the same examples, and we feel we're different. And coming back to happiness, if people really want more happiness, I'll sum it up in a heartbeat, that there is an easy trick to it, right? Because understanding happiness is pretty kindergarten level, to be fair, unless I'm missing something here, but I'll share it with you. Happiness is nothing more than a byproduct of thinking happy thoughts. Case closed. You want more happiness? Think more happy thoughts. What prevents people from doing that is the rules they have around what has to happen, usually in the outer world, in order for them to give themselves permission to think happy thoughts. And, oh, well, I have to have the perfect relationship. I have to have six-pack abs. I have to have X money in the bank. Then I will give myself permission to be happy. It's unbelievable. But go back to the gym. Are you happiest at the point where you walk into the workout knowing it may be challenging, or are you happier when you bust out that last rep against the odds where you didn't think you could do one and you end up doing three because your personal trainer is saying, come on, do it. I believe in you. Come on, Christine. You've got it in you and you bust that out. Where's the greatest part of happiness in that workout? After the adversity, what's life trying to teach us? Where's the fruit on the tree? You've got to go out on a limb to get it. Most of the gold, when it comes to things like adversity, like in relationships. Relationships are a phenomenal crucible of growth because they offer a real environment that's rarely duplicated in other areas of our life. Because now we have close proximity and intimate proximity with somebody that can judge us. And yeah, we don't care if somebody flips us off in traffic because, you know, a day later we've forgotten about it. If we're at a low level of consciousness, maybe two levels a day, whatever. But if our partner turns around and says, well, listen, you just don't satisfy me in bed. Oh, bang. I mean, that hits you in a different place. Yeah. Or, you know, I don't love you anymore. Or, you know, I'm in love with your best friend. Whatever it may be, relationships provide a magnified crucible of that level of growth. And again, the purpose of a relationship is not to be happy. If you think that, you're in Disneyland. Yeah, good luck. How's it working for you? No, the purpose of the relationship is, again, to provide a mirror for you to be shown parts of you that you need to grow through. Yeah, your disowned parts most of the time. If you're impatient, prepare to marry somebody who's not on time. Yeah. If you can't stand drinking, yeah, you prepare to be, you know, attracted to somebody who becomes, you know, turns out to be a secret drinker. That is just the nature of the game. We attract the best personal trainers for us in the earth gym. Happiness, think happy thoughts, but also know that it's our rules that prevent us from thinking happy thoughts that are our enemy, not the circumstances that we blame. And most happiness is found on the other side of adversity, where we can look back and think, wow, thank goodness that happened. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this now.
And I hear a lot of people, their narratives, though, where they kind of, when they get stuck in this, is that it's like all this adversity is happening to me. And so it's this, almost this victim narrative or conversation. It's like, okay, this has happened to me and that's happened to me. And this person did this to me and this person did that to me. And it just becomes this place of, it's impossible to think happy thoughts, really, because the world's out to get me.
That's because they don't understand the nature of Earth School. If you fail fifth grade, you're going to have to resit the exam. There'll be different questions, but it'll be the same level of exam. So, for example, I have a concept I call the rumble strip of life. Right. So if you're going down the freeway and you're listening to your music and everything's cool and you're just sleeping awake, as most people are, but you're heading down in a certain direction. And let's say you stop veering off track. Now, let's say that, you know you really should be healthy and go to the gym, but, you know, you're eating, you know, one, two burgers a week, and then it becomes four or five, and you're kind of drifting off track. It's using a health example. At some point, you have a rumble strip at the edge of the freeway. It's there to wake you up, right? And all of a sudden, there you are, munching on your typical lunch of, you know, supersized whatever, and you start feeling a pain in your chest. Oh, wow, where did that come from? You know, are you getting headaches or whatever it may be? It's the rumble strip. It's there to say, hey, buddy, you're off track. Now, here's how most people respond to that. They think, well, I'm driving down the freeway of life. I'm listening to my music. I'm having a good time. And all of a sudden, I'm driving over this rumble strip and it's interfering with my music. So what do? I turn my music up. What happens? Well, hopefully the rumble strip gets louder. Although for some people, the first sign of heart disease, 40% of people, the first sign of heart disease is a fatal heart attack. Their music was playing so loud, they didn't listen to any of the signs that were whispering before that. Now, life has a principle which I call escalating feedback, which means if you're not learning the lesson because you don't know you're in school, because you don't know that adversity is there to be able to train you in the gym, then it will keep on bringing stuff to your attention because you haven't graduated that level of class. In other words, you, Christina, probably have far less people that flip you off in traffic than somebody who hasn't learned the lesson on how to let go of that and send them love and realize that they obviously need the road more than you do. They're clearly busy. Thank goodness that's not me, right? That I have to be so angry just driving to work that I'm willing to be abusive to people I don't even know. I mean, that's, you know, I'm grateful for that. So you're far less likely to get those lessons. You'll probably have a higher level of exam because you're not in kindergarten. You're probably closer to college. Therefore, your exams are going to be harder. You're going to have somebody that you thought was a friend probably betray you. You're going to have somebody that you thought you had certain feelings about that turns out doesn't have those feelings, whatever it may be. You can have something where it's not somebody flips you off in traffic. It's somebody that backs into you in a parking lot and doesn't leave a note, whatever it may be. It's a higher level of exam. People that say, oh, this happened and that happened. And how can I be happy? All this stuff. Be happy by understanding you need to wake up and realize that as soon as you pass the exam, as soon as you learn to give more forgiveness than judgment, as soon as you learn to have more humility than ego, as soon as you learn to have more compassion than anger, you will probably transcend that lesson to a different lesson. And you won't need to have that. And that's
the key point also, is that then there's the next lesson and test. And then there's a period of time, then there's the next lesson and test. So it's not like you get to the place where you reach a certain place and the tests are over.
Well, if you do become enlightened, you know, 4 out of 5 people choose to leave this classroom. If you look at any of the statistics around people that have achieved what I would call congruent awareness of non-duality. In other words, they've reached the level of ASMI. They see, complete oneness. They experience oneness. There's no need to be in Earth School at that point, right? They'll go off to college, which is probably maybe has less rules around it than this physical reality. This physical reality has a pretty tight rule set. Why? Pretty simple to me. If you were able to not be bound by the rules of the physical reality, most people would be teleporting into the bank vaults to help themselves. Or they'd be teleporting into the ladies' locker rooms, whatever it may be. Yeah, there's a sense of emotional maturity that is required, or spiritual maturity that's required, to be a little more free of the tight rule set that governs Earth School. Yeah, so, why wouldn't you leave a loaded 9mm in a playground? Because, kids, would hurt themselves. But would you blink twice at a loaded 9mm if it was on a table in a special ops briefing room? Well, no, because the guys there or the girls there are mature enough to understand how to use it. They're not just going to pick it up randomly and say, oh, what's this, and point it around. So, there's a sense of that. But there's also a sense of, coming to terms, with the graduation events of our life, and knowing that if we don't pass the exam, we're going to have to reset it. And for some people, that may be their second mild heart attack, or their third failed business, or their second failed marriage, until they realize that, it's not about what can I get at the expense of others, but what can I contribute through growing more of who I am to bring to the table.
That's really good. And you were so helpful for me in a similar situation, in that I really love this coaching you gave me, because, even someone that I think is very accountable and very responsible and take ownership of my own life and make my own decisions and take responsibility for the successes and the colossal failures, far more colossal failures than successes, by the way. But, I had a situation where in business that was a very difficult one. And I was in a space of, the fact it wasn't fair, it wasn't right, it was unjust, and I had to deal with this. And your coaching was, or the reframe was, Christina, what if you chose this? What if you chose this test? What if you chose this adversity? If you did, if you can just spend a minute and kind of get out of this feeling of why did this happen? It's unjust, it's unfair, it's not right. And that was true, in my opinion. But if that's even the case, if you can move out of that frame and move into the frame of, if you chose that challenge that cost you a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of emotional energy, and a lot of hurt, why would you have chosen that? What was the test there? And I had to pause and really think about it. And then it became so obvious that I was completely unaware of it. But when I put it in the reframe of, I chose this adversity in my life, because there was a test and there was something I couldn't see, and it had been a repeated pattern, that once I saw this, like, I've got it. I can now pass this test. That won't happen again. So I just love that too, is just the reframe of adversity's there. The challenges are there. The growth happens. And if we choose it even, if we can even put ourselves in the place of choosing it, that can help us maybe pass the test. But it really is, I think, just going back to what you say, it's the purpose of life isn't the absence of adversity. The adversity is the growth experience, and we grow, we learn, we conquer that fear, that we learn that lesson, so we can move on to what's next. And then that's really the journey of life. And on that note, another thing I wanted to ask there is, how important is environment? So when we're looking at making changes, when we're looking at moving the needle, if you will, and being better at taking these tests and really just changing our lives in the way, improving our lives, how much importance do you place on the environment, meaning the people we surround ourselves with, the conversations we're in, the what we do with our time, you know, the space-time environment?
It's critical because we have a built-in adaptability sense. Yeah. And again, physically, we understand that. You know, your body is a 24/7 adaptation machine. Put it in the sun, it'll tan. Yeah, put it in, you know, Iceland, you know, it won't. put it in McDonald's, it will adapt to McDonald's. Put it in the gym, it will adapt to the gym. We get that. We understand. What people fail to be aware of most of the time is that our mind is exactly the same. It is a 24/7 adaptation machine. And so, you know, if you hang around with, you know, 10 recreational drug users that are making excuses as to why life, you know, doesn't support them, you'll likely become the 11th. If you hang around with 10 motivated people that are looking at life from a possibility thinking perspective and coming up with reasons as to why they can, not why they can't, you'll probably become the 11th. And so, you know, we adapt to our environment mentally far more than physically. And people don't, they tend to miss that, which is why watching the news is just, you know, it's evolutionary suicide, because you are de-evolving yourself into a more disorder, more chaos, more fear, and far less unity, harmony, compassion, cooperation, and love. Because that's not the business goal of the media. The business goal of the media is to recruit you as a statistic, yeah, so it can justify rate cards and viewing figures. And it does that by triggering a part of your brain called the amygdala, which is the one part that bypasses something called the reticular activating system. And it's based upon noticing negative before positive. In other words, it gets your attention quickly. So that's why you can be driving unconsciously and all of a sudden just miss the accident in front of you or the brake lights you react to, because your amygdala is immediately warned that something is about to show up or something's happening that could threaten you. And your unconscious has a program to protect you around that or notice that a lot of the time. Your environment is the one area where you can consciously set yourself up to win or by default set yourself up to lose. And many people don't get that. They're too busy reacting to life. But you know, if you know that the mental diet and your mental environment, you know, and the impact it has on you is going to be critical to your success in Earth School, then you may want to choose to question who you hang with. And I've always said, you know, love your family, but choose your friends. And it doesn't mean to say that you're better or them, you know, than them. That's just the spiritual ego talking a lot of the time. You know, if you are further along your journey of awareness, because you know we've been grateful enough to have some insights from people that you know walked the path before us that allowed us to have a sense of understanding as to what's going on, we shouldn't invalidate those people or feel more significant or ego, you know, based, more superior to anyone that hasn't yet had the fortune or the opportunity to have that same level of awareness. So, you know, if it means cutting some of your friends loose, send them love, recognize they're on their own journey. You know, what's better, a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old? A sapling or a small tree? Yeah, a small tree or a large tree? There's no better or worse. They're simply further along on their journey of expressing their potential. And for some people, again, it's not correlated to age, not even correlated to lifetime. Some people, it's many lifetimes to, you know, to go from acorn to sprout, yeah, or from sapling to small tree. It doesn't matter. Everyone's on their own journey, and be okay with that. We also need to understand one fundamental awareness as well that's very critical. Again, coming back to the, you say people that says, oh, well, all this happens to me, and they're in victim mode, and they don't have a context for understanding that, you know, the harder I'm banging my head on the window, the more it's hurting my head, right? Which is essentially the language pattern that's going on. You know, move out of victim mode and you know, into taking personal responsibility, and the window next to you is open. The lesson is this, or the universal constant that I've come to observe is this. When you have a low level of awareness, when you are egocentric, when life is about what you can get, not what you can give, when it's all about how to look good rather than help others, and all of that journey that we have to go through as you know, the early part of our growth, you know, Buddha wasn't born enlightened, then one of the constants that I've seen is that we generally learn more from pain than we do pleasure. In other words, life has to give us a slap to get our attention. Again, it may have to be a mild heart attack before we wake up and realize that supersizing our meal isn't, you know, justified by saying, look how much money we just saved, yeah, by the value we got. It may be we split up with our wife and she takes our kids and gets custody before we learn that, you know, being dominant and controlling isn't the best way to express unconditional love. Yeah, so we learn more from pain than we tend to do pleasure. At higher levels of awareness, we tend to get far less of the painful experiences because we have opportunities to grow with experiences that aren't as, you know, slap you in the face, get your attention, because we're open to that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense. So that causes me to think, and since we're really approaching, well, we've approached our hour, so we'll go a little bit over time here because, I mean, you and I could probably talk 4 hours and there's just so much to share, and we'll point everyone exactly where to find you. But there's a couple other things I'd like to touch on before we close. And one thing you said, the event, your event in London, my event here in Austin. And I just, again, it was really just, for me, it was a really shift in a way of thinking, which I love. I love those moments that can be just a sentence or a quote, or it's a reframe that completely changes your whole way of seeing the world, that which means it changes everything. And it's amazing to me that one teeny tiny thing can completely shift your life. And I think that's part of this learning, constantly learning and being in this growth experience and being open and curious and being willing to be wrong and being, you know, okay with uncertainty that allows these openings to happen. But one thing you said that you've said is that we can only project from where we're at. And so, and then you've really talked about this level of consciousness. And so, so many times I think we can find ourselves judging others or getting upset or angry because people act the way they act, and without an understanding that people can only project from the space they're in or the level of consciousness. So would you speak a little bit more to that?
Sure. And a model that I tend to use a lot is that from the late great, you know, Dr. David Hawkins, the author of Power Versus Force, which is a game-changing book. Again, you know, when you say, you know, one little thing can change everything, what you're doing is you're shifting the context of your life rather than wrestling with the content of your life. Most people spend their entire life trying to change the content in order to rearrange the stuff, you know, their relationship, their health, their money, their whatever, in order to fit the rules of what they think has to happen to be happy. But you can make one shift in context, change how you see your life. Again, it could be as simple as understanding it's a growth-centric experience. That could be a game changer for people. And everything changes. So context is definitive. Looking at Hawkins's model, he delineates consciousness into a map of 16 different levels. And it's a beautiful model, but there's a couple of awarenesses that come with it from my perspective. One is there is no better or worse. There is only a more appropriate level than the level beneath it in order to operate from. And I'll give you an example. So if you're down at the bottom, let's say in guilt, shame, or apathy, which are very low levels of consciousness, they feel bad, but there's a lot of people that live there. Now, if you're in apathy and you're getting sand kicked in your face, you know, either somebody's bullying you literally or figuratively or, you know, commercially or whatever it may be, somebody that calibrates much higher on the map, let's say anger. Now, anger is still a destructive level of consciousness, but it carries a lot more power than apathy. If I'm working in intervention with somebody and they're apathetic, I will try to elicit the emotion of anger because then I can redirect into something positive. But somebody who's just apathetic and doesn't care, you know, about whether they live or die, that's a hard level to work with because there's very little leverage. So getting into anger is usually a good next step for me to give the energy to work with to then channel something positive. But if somebody's operating at anger and they look at somebody getting sand kicked in their face, their response to that person will be, stand up for yourself. Punch them back. Now, from anger, that's a more appropriate response than having somebody steamroll over you if you're in apathy. Now, if you progress higher to more slightly more enlightened levels of consciousness, let's go up the scale to more sort of neutrality and diplomacy. And you go to the United Nations. And yeah, if somebody's now trying to steamroller you in a unilateral peace agreement, for example, punching them in the face is no longer an appropriate response. Yeah, we have to chunk up. So, you know, the higher your consciousness, the more emotionally mature your level of options. If you go all the way up to a place of love, then you have compassion for the people that are in anger. If you go to, again, in levels of enlightenment and non-duality, then you're not even going to have the conversation, because you recognize it's simply a disowned part of who you are. You're all part of one. So why am I even at loggerheads with that? You know, that'd be like an autoimmune disease in the body, right? Fighting yourself. So, you know, there's no better or worse, right or wrong, specifically right or wrong, which people get so caught up in, but at a level of appreciation that everybody can only project from the level they're at. You know, an alcoholic will drink. Why would you blame them for drinking? That's what alcoholics do. Somebody who's naturally angry is going to respond from anger. Why would you judge them for that? That's what people that are angry do. Now, there is simply an awareness that you can only project from the level that you're at. And once you get to that level of understanding, there's nothing to defend, there's nothing to conquer, and there's nothing to prove. You simply just are happy with where you are. It's a high level of consciousness called acceptance, you know, which calibrates at 350 on Hawkins' scale for those interested. So, you know, there is that. The other thing to note on the level of consciousness is that the higher you go, the power is exponential. You look at Nelson Mandela coming out of jail. You know, what did he say? I knew that if I brought my bitterness and my anger with me, even though they closed the door behind me, I'd forever live in prison. You know, I mean, so powerful. So he came out at a level of forgiveness, authentic forgiveness. He thanked his guards for taking care of him. You know, he, as a result of that, was able to almost counterbalance, as an example, 30 million people that were operating at anger or pride. That, you know, would have caused the country civil war and bloodshed if he'd have come out and calibrated at the same level, justifiably so in millions of people's minds and hearts. Oh, yeah, you've been suppressed and locked up for 27 years. Now it's our turn to get revenge. That would have been a one-way ticket to a bloodbath. Instead, calibrating at a high level of consciousness coming from love, what did he say? Hey, listen, if I can forgive them, what excuse have you got? And he united a country under the genius slogan of the Rainbow Nation, all different colors, because it wasn't just blacks versus whites. It was different tribes of different shades against other differences. It was Zulus against Ubuntus. It was all sorts of stuff. And he came from such a place of reverence, humility, lack of ego, forgiveness and love. He counterbalanced that amount of people. So you may say, well, I'm surrounded by people that are angry and everything. There's not a lot I can do about it. You coming from love can change the entire environment that you're in if you have the strength to be able to do that. So, and again, it's not better or worse. It's just, where are you at the authentic level of radiance on your journey?
And part of, like you said, is the part of Earth School, again, is the emotional maturity, the emotional growth. And I think what I hear you saying is that's what emotional growth and maturity is. It's raising to a higher level of consciousness, a place of more love, forgiveness, compassion, empathy in a way of just for more of a place of love and gratitude.
Absolutely. And again, you can only hear from the level you're at. So it's okay if this isn't making congruent sense in your heart and right now, because again, take a master teacher over 2000 years ago, said that, if you are someone, your enemy strikes you, turn the other cheek. Now from his level of consciousness, Jesus, who calibrated at the top of the scale from, place of enlightenment, he was talking about a strength beyond a strength in the word called surrender. You're surrendering your hatred. You go to a U.S. Marine and say, listen, what association do you have to the word surrender? And you get a very different level of understanding, because that calibrates at pride. In fact, pride is a very strong sense of force, the strongest sense of force, which is perfectly attuned to the United States Marine Corps. It can run the entire Marine Corps, but it doesn't serve to a path of higher levels of peace. Now, that's peace through oppression, superior firepower. And it has its role. It's not better, it's not worse, it's not right, it's not wrong. It's the more appropriate level depending on your level of consciousness. So, people that don't hear the message that you hear from, be okay with that. They're just at a different level. If you can't hear the wisdom of some of the spiritual masters, it's predictable, right? We're just not at that level yet. Be okay with that and seek to try and find the wisdom that resonates with where you are.
That's amazing. All right. So to close here, I want to a few minutes about the inside track and to bring this full circle. So you have just finished your book that I'll let you tell a little bit of your story there, but it's going to be released here in a few days. And so everyone listening, I will be pointing you actually petersage.com/VIP book launch. And we'll be putting that in the show notes, but everybody listening, I'm sure you've loved been hanging on every word that Peter's been saying, but we're all going to pick up the book. But talk a little bit about the inside track, about your book that's coming up here in a couple days, and what you hope to accomplish through this book.
Well, it's funny you say it was, you know, recently finished. It was actually finished a year ago, but it's been waiting for a year to really release it for several reasons. And the book is very unique. It's not a book that I sat and wrote because I ever thought it would be a book. It's actually a collection of 11 letters that I wrote from a very interesting place last year when I was presented with my graduation event from life at that point. And that's where I found myself being a civil prisoner in essentially kind of the San Quentin of the UK, Pentonville. And I didn't see it coming, as most of your graduation events will come out of left field. That's how the game works. Otherwise, you know, if we knew them in advance, we'd try to revise for the answers if we knew the exam questions. Yeah, I was in court for a civil action that I was fighting against what I felt was a bully boy, you know, oppressive Fortune, you know, 100 company that had a lot more money than I did. And, you know, I thought that they were running a contempt of court application on a business deal that we were arguing over. I really didn't give it much credibility because I thought the judge would laugh it out of court in 5 minutes. I was there to prove why, you know, it was false. And I learned a lot about how the court system works because I watched a masterful display of how, you know, people that can hire much better lawyers than I could can spin the, you know, distort context to, you know, make content appear in a different light. And I found that that was really the underlying aspect of litigation. And I found myself on the wrong end of a court order for contempt. And I was sentenced to serve 6 months in jail as a non-criminal, having never been accused of a crime. And it was one of those weird, quirky things. And when it looked as if it was going the wrong way, I turned to my fiance and she says, "Wow, what's going on?" I said, "Well, there's a chance I might end up in jail here, honey." And she's like, where did that come from? And I'm like, "Well, I don't know, but here's what I do know. You know, I'm very blessed and fortunate. My work has helped so many people over the years across, you know, millions of people across the world, you know, through my videos and my other stuff. But there's also a lot of people that it probably could help may never get access to it, especially in places like Pentonville. And if life wants to throw me in there in a dark place and try to be a bit of a light and sort of give my gift in that kind of area, I'm like, honey, let me go. Let me go do it if that's what it wants. Yeah, it'll be a graduation event. Let's see what happens." I went in and never had the identity of a prisoner for 1 second. I had the identity of a secret agent of positive change. And my role there was to try to, you know, bring a light to a very dark place. And it, don't get me wrong, it was tough, but it was one of the most incredible and magical and inspiring adventures I've ever had the privilege of living. And I was able, you know, graciously to be able to create a very big impact in quite a short time. And, you know, I was nominated and subsequently won a national award for the work that I was doing in helping getting people off drugs and saving suicides and, you know, and reframing people and getting them out of depression and really creating a movement in a jail that really needed it. And, you know, I'll go into it, but the short version was I started writing every 2 weeks to my coaching clients, you know, my private high-level clients. And I said to them, I says, "Hey, listen, guys, this is an amazing opportunity for me to demonstrate some of the things I've been teaching you and how to apply them in a real life situation. Yeah, no cameras, no second takes, no delete button, no reframing or polishing off the email, none of that. This is real. It's brutal. I mean, 3 deaths in 1 week was the worst week I was there. Yeah, and that's, you know, combination of you know, the violence of the place, suicides, overdose. I mean, it was just insane. And so I wrote these 11 letters, and they are a deep dive into the best of my work and how to apply it when life really hits you with a bat from left field. And, you know, I was losing my business. I was losing my home. I was losing my reputation because nobody knew what was happening. And I was like having an absolute blast in one of the most dangerous environments I'd ever faced. And those 11 letters, when I came out, people, you know, my coaching group said, "Listen, you know, these letters changed our life. You know, you are giving us tools that we can apply in our own lives that was just transformational. You need to share this with the world." So I says, "Look, I wrote this for you guys, but, you know, I reread them and I'm like, wow, you know, you're right. There's a lot of stuff in here. You know, each one goes into a different aspect of not only the journey that I was on in real time, but the tools and techniques I was using and how I was applying them." So, you know, I put them all together, the 11 letters. It's a book called The Inside Track. I'm very proud of it because it was literally the 11 letters that I wrote in a place where most people wouldn't want to go. Those that have read the advanced copies, their lives have changed. And I'm very blessed for that. So I just want to give it as a gift to the world and publish that. And yes, we've got a big launch event starting. It goes on the 1st of August. It'll be available. We're going to do a countdown from 11 days from the 21st of July on the event page, which, as you said, you can get to from petersage.com/VIP book launch. And I've got a load of stuff I'm putting in there as well for gifts for people. You know, if you support me on buying the book on the 1st of August, yeah, I'm going to give you hundreds of dollars worth of the best of my other material, just because it shows you really want to learn. You want to get the lessons in Earth School. And I'm so happy because they're my kind of people. They're the people I can help. And so I'm stacking that up. So thank you for the opportunity to share that. But yeah, that's really what it's about.
Well, thank you so much. And everybody listening or watching, if you've gotten just one nugget out of this, share the love back to Peter, pick up his book, help him. Let's all help him get his bestseller status and just spread his book and his word and his message across the world. And we can all do this together as a cooperative, as a community, and just work at a higher level of consciousness and do all good work together. So one final question that I ask all my guests is just to myth bust. That's what Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise is all about. It's just to get outside of the conventional common status quo and just break some myths so that are keeping people stuck. So what's like where you are now and the work you are, where you are and you just even coming out of that adversity, you're more explosive and powerful and loving and your word and your message is so much bigger and it comes with so much heart. And you went through horrible adversity. I mean, I can't even imagine what you've gone through to get where you are now. And you're just such a better version with better work coming out of that. So, you know, you're like, you know, you're living what you teach. And so you're an example of what you teach, which is unusual. But really where you are now, where do you see as sort of this myth that you want to debunk that's keeping people trapped that you just see everywhere right now?
People are scared because, you know, they feel they're not good enough. They feel that they've got to have certain things appear in their life in order to feel happy. They don't get that, again, the true magic of life shows up when you embrace the concept of why you're here. Because then you stop resistance. Resistance to what already has happened is futile. It's just, the milk is spilt on your new carpet, and you're pulling your hair out, then that's not going to help. Get rid of that energy so you can clean the milk up. You can channel it into a better course of action. If you're moaning right now because your bank account's empty and you've lost your job and your partner's walked out and everything else, resisting all of that is futile. Acceptance as a first level as to what is allows you to free up that resistance, that enmity, that negative energy, and channel it into, well, okay, let me ask, who are my friends? What couch can I sleep on for the next 3 weeks while I put a resume together and go out and try to add value to employers to get myself on back? It just gives you a shift in focus. So, getting people out of the victim mentality, which is conditioned through the news, then is probably a big aspect. And I'm moving forward now. The inside track is out, and that's going to help hopefully millions of people. It's such a how-to manual for how to get over adversity. I'm very proud that of the impact is already happening even before the launch. But I'm going to be focused on helping more people with the work that I do. I'm already working on my next book, which is again a deep dive. It's actually going to be called Earth School, and giving people a context for understanding life and a map to navigate that at a really deep level, and really just helping people to wake up from the unconscious, sleeping awake, fear-based mentality that through no fault of their own, they've really been conditioned through the imposition of society by.
Well, thank you so much. I can't thank you enough. And again, thank you personally. Thank you professionally. Thank you for everything that you're offering my audience. And obviously, we'll do everything we can to help support you and your book launch. And Kirk and I will see you in Bali here in a few weeks.
Absolutely. For our Masters Relationship Center, I'm very excited about that and looking forward to seeing you. And thank you so much for being an amazing host as well last couple of weeks while I was over in at the Wealthy, Wealthy Wise. And I'm loving the work that you're doing. You're a living example of the person that I relate to and point to say, hey, listen, it doesn't matter what happens in your life. Cause I know you've gone through tremendous adversity and I know your audience knows that. But look, I mean, you've come out stronger, wiser, more beautiful, more radiant, more energetic, with more gifts to give. And that is just a great way to demonstrate why we're here and how to do it.
Well, thank you. Well, love you, man. And thank you so much. And I will see you soon.
And so ends another episode of the Wealthy, Wealthy Life podcast, where Christina brings you unconventional, cutting-edge strategies from leading experts to optimize your wealth and your health. As a token of gratitude for listening, go to podcast.fallingformoney.com and download a free copy of her best-selling book, Falling for Money. If you're ready to change your relationship with money, head on over to podcast.fallingformoney.com and download your free copy today.